Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you for asking.
What's going on? What's new?
Nothing, just, looking at the internet, people having photos about things.
Critiquing depth of field. Well, fake depth of field, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said in our last episode, where we speculated about what it might be, it has a lot of the shortcomings that I would have expected. Some things it kind of does a little better than I thought. And, that's fine. And I have no philosophical issue with it. So, doesn't matter that it's phony baloney. It's totally fine by me. And I believe you said also fine by you. It's just some of these results, a little broken. And, some people are like, oh, look, it's just as good as my DSLR. And it's like, there is a hole here where that is blurred out to an excessive degree that it shouldn't be. So just FYI. But, that's just life.
Yeah. I thought we were gonna have to wait longer to see some examples of this, by the way, we're live. I forgot about the beta. People are on betas and they got their phone, so they installed the beta. So that's interesting. It was just a big hullabaloo.
Yeah. Surprise. I don't know.
I
And
kinda wish they would have done something they would have emulated a not wide open aperture, so you would actually see some like fake iris blades or something back there instead of just like round soft blobs. Like maybe something with like a slightly, hexagonal shape or something would have been cool. I don't know, but maybe it's just me.
Round is fine and pleasant, but there are some aspects to it. Well, no, but seriously, if you're gonna like show something to a bunch of people, most people don't understand that there are little blades and things inside. And they also like if this had been like an anamorphic effect, or if there had, God forbid, been some like we're gonna simulate anamorphic blur on here, that would have been wonky. And people wouldn't know. They'd be like, oh, why are there these giant elliptical things? It's like, well, you see, if this was really an anamorphic camera, then it would have compressed the image, and you'd get the little highlights that are all stretched out in one direction. But we can't really go into all of that. But the
Somebody's going to write that app, aren't they? They're going to write an app that allows you to pick how many iris blades you get and what aperture you're simulating and whether it's anamorphic or spherical.
No, because Apple's not giving anybody access to the depth map that they're using for this. So
Well, can't somebody write their own depth map?
someone could rewrite this procedure, I guess, but I don't know if they have access to any of the low-level stuff that, like, some of the things that are recognizing these edges are also doing it because they're recognizing objects and people. Not
Like face
not just.
detection stuff.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, is like it can detect a face is there, so it can kind of keep everything on the same plane. So you don't have like somebody with sunglasses on have the sunglasses be these giant blurry holes in their head, that sort of stuff. And so somebody would have to write that for themselves, I guess, if they did it in software. So no, I'm not anticipating third party apps that will do anything like this.
Would be pretty cool.
Meh.
I bet you'd sell a lot of them, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Business opportunity.
It doesn't really seem like it's a business opportunity because the phone does it by default, but
Want to be able to pick my aperture and my iris blades.
well,
Apple's got to
Dan?
do something to bring the camera nerds back to loving the
No,
feature.
that's not no none of that needs to happen.
Sorry, what was it? Camry needs? What was the
It was someone made a typo. Let's not get into that.
I'm not gonna do that.
Yeah, it's I don't really see there being enough of a market to justify the R&D necessary for that, but you can file a radar and ask for some controls. Maybe they can put it in the accessibility settings. You can tell them that
Oh, that'd be great.
you're really offended by the soft focus, and you would like aperture blades, hexagonal preferably.
Aperture taken with lasers. That's what I want. No, I don't care at all. It was just interesting. There's a lot of it going on today.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody's got a shiny new toy, and they can blog about it. But you can also post side by sides on Twitter.
Yeah.
And ask which one's real. But whatever. It's fine. Whatever. And I don't mean to deflate anyone's enjoyment of it. It's just, you know, as long as it doesn't look like totally broken, I don't care. It looks nice. If it pleases you, then I'm happy. I'm happy for you. But...
Yeah, I'm happy that you're happy.
Yeah. And besides, what do you care? You have a tiny phone. A small, minuscule device that can't perform any of these functions.
Mm-hmm. But it's shiny, so that's awesome. It's pretty great.
Well, maybe you can use the reflection on the back of your iPhone.
Mm.
Reflected as an image, something reflected into that, and then shot with another iPhone 7 Plus. And that way you can actually do some neat nested blurring effects.
Maybe I'll build a like a camera clip-on thing that splits it down the middle with a mirror and then has a longer lens on one side, and then I can do it all the same stuff with just a little add-on.
No, Dan, you missed that part earlier when I said there's all this software thing.
Well, it's software. I can download it. I'll find it on the internet. I'll rip the torrent or whatever.
Yeah.
I'll just do a diff with the iOS 10 for the Plus, and then I'll be able to find that code.
Yes. Yeah, there's also a folder that says chip specs, and just go rummaging in there. You'll find it.
Yeah, it's a folder called camera, second camera stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You also you got to hang out with the world's tallest Russian yesterday.
Yes, I met Andrzej Tomich.
Who, by the way, I have to point out, just posted in the Slack, you can buy a whole pizza at Walmart for $5.
His fascination with Walmart is very strange.
It's troubling is what it is.
For listeners who are not familiar, Andrzej is huge in Slovenia, both in the literal and figurative sense. And he's a tech blogger.
I had a drink in my mouth. Don't do that.
Okay. He's a tech blogger in Slovenia, and he has an English podcast that he does sometimes, and you know, people have been on it, and it is a fun listen. And he's also sometimes a guest on the Clockwise podcast on Real AFM, Jason Snell's very short 30-minute tech podcast. And so I met John Jay, and he had his Clockwise shirt on, and we had a nice little get together at Father's office with him and Boom and Rye, both listeners of this show and many others. Boom says he listens to Andrzej's Slovenian language podcasts, even though he can't speak or understand.
Is he trying to like learn it? Like,
no,
Rosetta Stone kind of thing?
He uses it to go to sleep because he can't understand the language, but it's comforting to have the sound of people talking. So
he's comforted by the sound of Andrzej's voice.
Yeah, so that's something for our listeners if they're looking for a sleep aid. They can try that.
Slovenian tech podcast or whatever they talk about. You don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, but
maybe they're reading Goodnight Moon to you.
Yeah, so, and I met Andrzej's delightful girlfriend Ursha. And she,
you're not good with the accented letters.
No, it's really hard. And we had the whole thing where they were explaining which countries use the different ones and which ones pronounce it in different ways, and how unusual it is to have certain marks on people's names that are not of. Anyway, it's not a thing, but that I understand. But it is interesting nonetheless. And anyway, we were all talking, and she finally asked what we did, and I mentioned the podcast that Andrzej had been on, where we had talked about Stripes, a 1980s war themed movie about the army and RVs, I was just like, oh well, you know, it was the soft flaccid waffle was the name of the episode. She's like, oh, that was you guys, and she was so excited, and because that's why we take photos of the pancakes and talk about pancakes all the time. And I was just like, oh, interesting. We have a strong pancake influence on people, apparently.
We have bled over into their day-to-day culture.
Yes. He told me they had a listening party at their house one time, or some people were over. I hope not, just to listen to it. And he had it playing.
Our show?
He had that part of the show playing on a Chromecast in their living room area, and I was just like, that's really weird to subject your guests to, but sure. But I like Andre, and it was nice to meet him. And it's a shame that you could not travel 6 hours to be there.
He's still pretending I'm dead in the Slack because I couldn't make it.
Well, it's too bad. Now let us move along.
Moving back in time.
Yes, to the 1980s.
86.
Yeah, filmed in 85. And it is Top Gun.
A little bit of a Beverly Hills Cop 2 ripoff.
No, this came before that one.
Directly before it, but it's got a lot of similar DNA, literal DNA, because a lot of the same people worked on it.
Yeah, well, also, I think these people were basically the people running a lot of the shows at Paramount, because it was Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer producing again, and they had also produced the first Beverly Hills Cop, in addition to the sequel, Beverly Hills Cop 2. And
they were really the 80s dream team, weren't they?
I suppose so. it's interesting because there are a lot of elements of that crew that carry from one to the other, because we have Tony Scott directing, we have Jeffrey Kimball as the cinematographer, and all the same cinematography, and we have and it's all beautiful, by the way.
More gradient filters in this one than Beverly Hills Cop 2, but a lot of orange things still.
Yeah, well, everything's basically at sunset, but not really. It's sort of like a day for night, but it's like day for sunset.
Day for magic hour. Like, they take off and land at magic hour, and then they fly their missions at like 3 p.m.
Yeah,
so they have really, really, really good gas tanks on those things.
Well, apparently, Paramount paid the Navy $7,800 an hour for gas for the F-14s that they had to have them fly for them. They were otherwise allowed to just film regular operations on the decks and whatever takeoffs and landings that they would like to. But anytime they needed to actually record the jets, they would have to pony up the dough. And there was one.
If anything, this movie is an astounding exercise in actually trying to film airplanes, because they get a lot of really good footage out of what I got to imagine was an incredibly difficult filming situation.
Oh yeah, well then there's also so much planning that went to this, because they have they contracted with Grumman, who developed the F-14. To have these little camera pods that were mounted fore and aft on the, I think it's fore and aft, on the F-14, so that they could film takeoffs and landings from the actual plane's perspective, which is rather interesting and unique. And that works to great effect in this, because you otherwise couldn't take this, you couldn't do these things, because it's not like you could just like parent a camera to a 3D model of a plane and have it take off and land, because that technology was not available to anyone.
Shame how much of this movie would just go straight to CG these days.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just envisioning the movie Battleship just like this.
You know? Although, like, yeah, the logistical nightmare of shooting this all practically, just like, it makes my stomach churn. I would much rather do a lot of this stuff CG just for the ability to, like, save the effort of actually having to do it, but that's,
yeah,
you
well,
know.
That's why people do things with computers.
They don't have to spend $7,000 an hour on gas.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know how to break it to you about how much it costs for 3D artists to do things, but
I don't think it's $7,000 an hour, but it is expensive.
Well, not for one guy, but when you're talking about the number of things on a blockbuster film these days, it's you're probably spending about that much an hour on everybody that you're hiring, but
it's a fair point.
So they have there was something I read on Wikipedia that I'm trying to recall. Tony Scott had set up for a special shot where he wanted to get the sun behind the planes as they were landing or taking off. I can't remember which. And the boat had changed course. The aircraft carrier Enterprise that they were on, Enterprise. And so they had changed course, and he had to go up to the captain to ask how like they could go back on the previous course so he could get the lighting the way he wanted it for another 5 minutes. And he said you'd have to cut. He would have to get a check for $25,000 in order to change the direction of the boat. And so Ridley Scott wrote him a personal check for $25,000 to turn the boat for 5 minutes of additional filming with the lighting conditions that he wanted.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Wait, you mean Tony or Ridley?
Tony.
You said Ridley.
Oh, sorry.
I figured Ridley might just be there for fun anyway.
Yeah, he was just there for having fun, moral support.
I would be concerned that check wouldn't clear. I'd say, like, can you square cash it to me or something? But again,
yeah, it was the 80s. Everything was going up everybody's nose. So
bring me $25,000 in cocaine from your little room below deck, and then we'll do this.
Yeah. So they have the aircraft carrier, the Enterprise that I had mentioned.
You're very excited about that. Is there any other Star Trek connection you'd like to discuss and get out of the way now?
Well, no, I just wanted to mention the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Just talking about the Enterprise. And they have a number of great actors in this film who you will recognize from, like, everything else from the 80s. Because we have, of course, Tom Skerritt, Michael mm-hmm. Ironside.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we have our angry vice principal or principal of the school in Back to the Future and the cop in the He-Man Masters of the Universe movie.
James Tolkien.
Yes. Isn't he fun?
I love that every time I see him, I kind of like picture filming his scenes like out of sequence where he really wasn't, you know, he doesn't really know what's going on. And basically all of his direction is just to shout, God damn it, and like throw a hat. And like, yeah. He doesn't really do much else.
No. It's interesting though. And
he has a lot of flavor. He's very intense. I like him.
Yeah. And then you have some minor actors like Tom Cruise and Val Kilmer. And Anthony Edwards, and
Tim Robbins. Don't forget Tim Robbins.
Yeah, Tim Robbins.
Who plays Merlin?
And it's got Meg Ryan in a small role. Now, Kelly McGillis did not go on to do a tremendous number of other things, that I remember at all.
Yeah,
ever seeing. So, you know, that's too bad. She's fine. I think she does an okay job in this film with the horrible dialogue that she's given to say and the dramatic turns her character has to make in how she feels about people on screen. You know, Anthony Edwards, I had seen ER before I saw Top Gun for the first time. So I was like, oh, it's the ER guy. Because that is the only other thing that I of course, remember Anthony Edwards for.
But he's good. He's goofy. He plays his character well. Everyone loves Goose.
Yeah, everybody loves Goose. To
everybody
us.
Really liked him.
Yeah.
Wow. Kelly McGillis's mom's last name was Snell.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Do we have to disclose anything about that?
I don't know. Might have to put something down on our tax form or something.
Oh, yeah. Legal disclaimer. But the... but Top Gun is interesting. So we've got an interesting cast. We have an interesting crew. Mm-hmm. We have music, which plays a big part because we've got Harold Faltermeyer again.
Yes,
And he is the Faltermeyeriest in this. I think
he's not doing Beverly Hills Cop for sure, but he's playing along with the rest of the music. Like he's jamming to some guitar.
Yeah,
Kenny Loggins here, but.
What was it? Giorgio Moroder did some of the lyrics on some of these songs, and Kenny Loggins is doing Highway to the Danger Zone, mm-hmm. and he's singing that, and he also has that weird, the one that played for the volleyball with, like, the boys or whatever, that one, that is just a peculiar song.
Yeah, I listened to that for a minute. It's the lyrics are supposed to be about the movie or something, but I already forgot what they are.
Yeah, No, yeah, it's I don't know. That was a
Don't forget
bad choice.
taking the breath away several
Yeah,
times.
they won an Oscar, Giorgio Moroder and whoever the other guy was that he composed it with, or wrote the lyrics for. They won an Oscar for that, for the best original song for a motion picture,
For which song?
for Take My Breath Away.
Oh,
Yeah,
why did I not think that was an original song?
I don't know.
Hmm.
No, it's original to this movie. Highway to the Danger Zone is original to this movie.
It's a great
That
song.
ridiculous volleyball thing is original to this movie. Some
I
other
mean, it's not that
pieces.
ridiculous. They're just blowing off some steam and playing volleyball in slow motion with an orange gradient on the camera and
Lots of baby oil all over them or something. Like
flexing and sweaty men. I mean, it's very warm down there in San Diego. People sweat.
is weird the amount of overly sweaty people that are in here. I don't find it. I don't find it appealing to
Well, I
me.
mean, as you pointed out, the movie is all about like machismo and like
Yeah.
guys and stuff. And they're like, well, we need some sort of like, intermittent activity for them to play when they're not doing stuff. And we need something manly or sportsy to do. But like, I guess they didn't want to do
Sportsy.
like basketball where they would be like actually required to have like, physical interaction and skill and stuff. It's like, what can we do that looks really cool on camera? And I guess they wound up with beach volleyball
Yeah, well, I mean,
and sweatpants slash jeans.
white people in California, what are you going to do?
Beach, well, it's a thing.
Yeah. And it's not like we're watching them play really. We're just like cutting to different slow-mo shots of people like
It's just
diving
an
and
ESPN
spiking.
highlight reel, yeah.
Yeah. It is so strange. But
And flexing.
that's not really the point of this movie. The point of this movie is Tom Cruise plays Maverick, a completely unsympathetic jerk, at the start of the film, and mostly unsympathetic and kind of still a jerk towards the end, but he has
Well, he's not that big of a jerk. He's just sort of he's a little full of himself, but he knows he's full of himself because he's self-aware.
but he's still kind of a jerk and also a total creeper. So th does I don't find those things mixed very well for me. I don't like Tom Cruise in this film, even though he is the protagonist. I'm just not rooting
Well,
for him at all because I don't
is
like
a
him.
His jerkiness is a defense mechanism because he really has inner demons. He's flying against his dead dad and stuff, Like
Yeah, well,
he's the underdog.
he has this whole complicated story that we find out by being told it in the third act about what happened to his dad. It's just like, oh God.
There's a fair amount of rehashing of his dad's stuff, but it's the way the movie shifts. It shifts in tone. Like first it's about pilots who are going to fancy pilot school, and then it becomes a story about Maverick and why he can't fit in at the pilot school, and then it shifts again into, not just about being the best in the pilot school, but being a good pilot for your buddies and stuff. And so it's a movie about Maverick, but I don't know. I think structurally the movie makes a ton of sense. You see how it got from A to B to C, and it works well. You find it problematic?
I don't want to I don't want to say problematic, but I just really he grates on me. This is and I have some Tom Cruise sensitivity. I
Yeah.
will admit to that. And so but in this particular role, I just find that he is so awful. Like
Well,
I
isn't this
can't.
the role that he is built for?
Yeah, I assume this is what he was assembled off of the factory line for. And he's so robotic and sort of like lizard like and I find him very creepy.
There is one scene, is it the dinner scene or whatever, where he's extra like crazy wide-eyed?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of them. Like when he first goes to his teacher's house and sneaks around back to
Yeah,
see
that
if it's
one.
open, and then talks about how he's going to take a shower at her place, and she's like, yeah, no. And then they sit there on
Well, she says
her.
yeah, no, because she's hungry. Not because she has like a moral objection, but she is a little like, what? What do you mean you're gonna go take a shower?
Yeah, it's super creepy and weird. And he has a weird fixation on like, oh, you rejected me, blah 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 blah. Like we must be together because I can't handle rejection. And it's like, There's a lot of insecurity about like one time somebody just said no to you when you had like the worst line about how you don't always sing. You've only done it two times, and the second time seems to be going pretty well so far. And it's just like, ugh,
Well, when
yuck.
he sees something he wants, he goes right for it. He's an aggressive flyer. If you think you're dead.
It's a target-rich environment, is what it is, Dan.
It's all about fight or flight reactions. And he flies in the daytime and fights when he's not in the plane. Fighting with his inner demons and stuff.
But I don't want to just dwell on the negative part of this movie, Tom Cruise. I want to talk about some of the positive things.
I don't think there's that much negative to it. I think this is, for a 1986 movie, I think this is kind of a perfect movie. It does everything that it sets out to do.
I think my thoughts on it are a little bit more complicated than that, because I don't want to give it the full pass of like, oh, it's great, it's the 80s, because I do have those feelings about it. And of course, it's 20, I sorry, 20, 30 years later. This is the 30th anniversary of Top Gun this year, this September, as a matter of fact. And I can't laud every aspect of this, because there's so much like leaden material that has to do with Tom Cruise and how unlikable he is that I find it unappealing. And so I go back to like, okay, Roger Ebert gave the film 2.5 out of 4 stars, pointing out that movies like Top Gun are hard to review because the good parts are so good and the bad parts are so relentless. The dogfights are absolutely the best since Clint Eastwood's electrifying aerial scenes in Firefox. But look out for scenes where the people talk to one another. So I'm kind of on the same page as Ebert on this one.
I don't think the talking is bad. I think it reinforces the story, but sure, I guess. I mean, yeah, they do have to be applauded for the expert work in the air with the dogfights and what have you. But I don't know. I think the characters fit the theme of the movie. Like, I mean, the whole thing is just it's just showy guys doing guy stuff, and it just sticks to that motif the whole way through.
Yeah, well,
This isn't a realistic movie in the slightest. It's
no.
but it's the broiest of bro 80s movies, and it does that as hard as it possibly can. And I find that it's very like honest and earnest in its performance. Like it goes directly at everything it's trying to do, and it's not trying to do any of it ironically or sort of like with a wink at the audience. It's like, no, this is the world and this is what we're gonna do.
Yeah, but I mean, it's melodramatic in it's serious moments, for the most part. But yeah, it's the broiest of bro movies. Like this is, it helped with Navy recruitment. Like I don't know what else to say about this. Although it is interesting, that it is so sort it sort of has so much machismo that it sort of like wraps back around into like a who is this for kind of a thing. Like there is so much like. Check us out. We're men who can get women and we fly and we're amazing. And it's like, yeah, but aren't you just doing this for other men at a certain point? Because are ladies really watching this? And like, yeah, I really like that beach volleyball. Like, I don't know.
No, I think this is a movie for guys who want to high five each other really, really hard. They high five so hard that they have to do a second high five down low immediately afterward.
Oh, I just hate everything about it. But
It's not your scene, I guess, but
no.
whatever. This is somebody's scene.
Yeah, I suppose people I don't like. But but like I said, like every scene in here, I think is shot beautifully. Like I think that the actual cinematography that's in here is worth watch. You should just watch this movie for no other reason than the cinematography is gorgeous. You can mute it whatever you want. I think that's a crime to mute it because then you miss the music. But just sit and watch this thing and just look at how the camera is used. Like not just in terms of like how he shot things, but the composition, the where the camera's moving in some of these scenes. Most of the time it's just a lock off, but there might be like a little pivot as it pushes from one side to the other, as a car drives around a corner, whatever. Like it's shot really well, it's composed really well. There's amazing aerial work. Even by today's standards, like I can't think of anything that I've seen after this movie that eclipses this for the aerial work.
No, it's just it's too too hard. Like I don't, I assume they planned a lot of this out, and they probably got a lot of great intel from some folks who do flying and say like they should do this sort of thing in a fight, and this is how it would go down if it was like 5 against 2 or whatever. But logistically, like I don't even know how you put together a shot list and then go up in the air and like plan on getting that stuff, because it's like nobody's looking through the lens necessarily, I imagine, and it's just like, all right, let's try some maneuvers and see how it comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a certain amount of this is just sort of like, well, what do we have that we shot at the end of the day? We were supposed to get this, this, and this. Okay, well, that kind of looks like that. Let's run with that.
I love that it's like it's out of focus. A lot of times, like the edge of some of the cameras like has like a light leak or whatever, and it's like a camera's worst nightmare, and it that adds to the realism, because you can tell it's just genuinely screwed up, because they could barely get this much footage. And you look at the shots, they're like maybe like a quarter of a second most of the time when the planes are flying by, when you're not inside the planes. And it's like, that's impressive work. You guys were able to get enough little tiny pieces to string together and make them look the same and actually turn it into a narrative.
Yeah, I mean, I don't envy the editor's job on this at all, because this was all film editing.
This would have been a disaster to edit.
Yeah, cataloging all of these clips to use, sorting through them, trimming things, putting them together, and then being like, hey, does that scene work? Yeah, I gotta fix this thing and this thing. And it's just like, oh man, I just couldn't do that. Like, mentally, I'm too spoiled by computers to be able to sit there and cut out and store and catalog and consider where I might have seen something that I could reuse here. Because I think there are a couple of shots in here that of the planes that they seem to either be reused or flopped or from a second take or something that they just used over again, especially when like the MiGs are flying around at the very end in the final battle, which I think looks great, but there are a couple that just there's sort of like a deja vu-ness about them. And there's also some model work in here with model planes that they used.
FOD explosions.
Mainly, yeah, they blew them up. Because I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but they didn't blow up any real planes for this.
It's a big gamble with a $30 million airplane.
No.
Remember when airplanes only cost $30 million? What do our fighters cost these days? Like 150, 300 million?
No, I think it's like $3 billion for each F-22 Raptor or something. I can't remember. It is an absurdity.
Oh, man, inflation from the 80s really gets you, doesn't it?
Yeah. Defense spending. Yay.
But look how cool it is.
Yeah, and
they need another Top Gun to really get people on board with all the money they're spending on these planes.
It's really effective in all of our wars that we've been fighting with MiGs. But
that's the only part of this movie that gets to me, is like when they're in that final dogfight, and like every other line is like, there's a MiG on your tail. It's like, well, we know there's a MiG on your tail. You can just say there's a plane or there's a guy or whatever. Like, you don't literally have to say MiG, because we know what it is. They say MiG like 30 times in like 4 seconds. It's great. We get it. Move on.
I'm going to say that didn't necessarily bother me, and I don't actually know the rules of what is proper to say in that situation.
You think they have to call it out?
I don't know if they have to call out what it is. I would have assumed that there would have been some procedure for tagging and saying, like, you know, MiG-2 was on my tail, MiG-3 is on my tail, or something. I have no idea, though, because as anyone listening to this podcast might be able to understand, I do not have any background in military stuff. And the fact that I just use the word stuff should let you know I really don't have any background.
Terminology or...
Yeah. I mean, I always thought the F-14 looked cool. I liked the variable wings. They look neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's sort of like the planes flexing. It's neat.
Yeah. Isn't the whole point of this movie is that the F-14s, what, they had like a longer range and a higher top speed, but they weren't as agile as the MiGs. And that's why this was an interesting battle between the big guys and the small guys.
Yeah, and that's also why they had the thing at flight school where they used the more maneuverable older planes. The F4s or A4s or something?
F4.
Yeah, the F4s.
I've been in an F4. Not like flying on the ground, I mean.
Oh, like an air show?
No, there's a fighter museum in Mesa here, and I don't know why, but when I was very little, my dad worked there briefly, and I got to go sit in some of the planes.
It's exciting.
Yeah, they had a lot of planes.
Well, did you sit in an F-14?
They didn't have an F-14. They had a lot of older planes, too. But F-4 Phantom, I sat in one.
Oh. Well, those are really...
Very uncomfortable.
Don't don't really interest me very much. I think they're kind of ugly. But I'm not here to judge. And the F-14 is no longer in service. So that's kind of sad too.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were many toys and cartoons of my youth that were themed after the F-14. Many robot transforming vehicles that were themed after the F-14.
I don't know the distinction between the F-14, 15, and 16. I know that some of them are better than others, but I couldn't tell you which.
They're different shapes.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's a big notable difference.
Which ones are shaped differently and why?
They're all shaped differently. But you know, like the F-14 has the dual engine thing. I think the 16 and the 18 both have single engines. If I'm not mistaken, but I'm just saying that from memory, and so no one write in and correct me because I don't care.
We are not fighter jet historians.
No, and if for any reason our conversation makes you go, "Oh, these guys don't know anything about aircraft," then I'm sorry.
Correct.
Feel vindicated. I hope.
Good job.
But yeah, the really interesting stuff is all the things that happen when they're in the planes. And the less interesting stuff for me is everything that happens when they're not in the planes. And I do like the scenes with Goose because he has a comedy element, as you said. Everybody likes Goose. But
it's got a great Polaroid of them doing their thing in the beginning there.
Yeah, and I like Kelly McGillis at the beginning of the film where she's basically like, yeah, no, this isn't happening. Not at all. And then she just like, he crashes and burns so hard from that. And what does he say? Like, I need a Miller Lite for that burn or something. Anyway, he is unsuccessful, and it is entertaining to watch her as a competent woman dodge all of his advances. And then, you know, she shows up as
she's got
Charlie.
A PhD in astrophysics or something.
Yes. Astrophysics, little known fact, hugely applicable to facts that you could get off of like a Snapple bottle cap about the MiG, I guess. It was weird what she did there exactly.
Well, you know, yeah. She just wants to let everyone know that MiGs have trouble doing a 1G negative dive because their fuel tanks and stuff.
Yeah, it's a peculiar role, really. Like I was happy that she was involved as a strong female character at the beginning of the film, though. And then when we start to get into the part where it's like, oh, you know, I just can't date a student, but I really like you. And then it's like, oh, I really just wanted your MIG information, but I didn't really want your MIG information. I just had to do that because I don't want them to know how much I love you. And it's just like, ugh.
People are allowed to be complicated.
I liked her better at the beginning.
You prefer your characters cold and emotionless.
No, I just liked it better when she was more in charge of herself, and I felt like she was...
You just liked her better when she didn't like Tom Cruise like you.
Well, of course. We were on team anti-Tom Cruise at the beginning of the film, but then she left me.
On team get away from me, you weirdo. Stop singing to me.
He's just so weird and unlikable. Like, they didn't do much to make him more likable over the course of this film, I would like to point out. Like, he just keeps getting creepier and creepier, and then once Goose dies... and then he's just really sad about it. And then he's kind of sad that he didn't get punished. And then he's sad because of his dad. And then Tom Skerritt has the aside where he's just like, you know, your dad really did all of this amazing stuff, but nobody could talk about it because it happened on the wrong side of the line. We weren't supposed to be there. So it all was all covered up. And it's just like, this is really strange. Also,
well, it humbled him when Goose died because he was very sort of like, look at me, I can do whatever I want. And then he realized that he was, you know, human and fallible to a certain extent. And, you know, the end of the movie was basically just trying to bring him back to the pilot he was, but without necessarily the same attitude. So he was a little more humble at the end of the movie, but he was able to do his thing again.
No, he was not humble because
a little bit more.
He goes right up to the flight tower and they say, no flyby. And then he does the flyby thing again. And the guy spills coffee, because that's what you gotta do. Every flyby, everybody gets a cup of coffee.
That was in memory. I think that was in memory of Goose, and the other plane did it with him, too, because it was just sort of like, we're gonna do one of these again.
Yeah, and then once
he wasn't being his crazy brash self.
And once they land, and Val Kilmer's like, you can be my wingman anytime, because they patched it all up. And then he says, no, you can be my wingman because I'm the best. And well, he doesn't say that I'm the best part, but I just ad-libbed that. But
that's as close as guys like that will ever get to saying, like, hey, man, thank you. I appreciate you helping me up there and let's hug. Like, that's how they say, we're friends now and I appreciate what you just did by saying, like, bro, you can be my wingman. Like, that's... You know, there were hugs. He hugged the other guys. He got rescued by the chopper, which conveniently landed at the exact same time as the planes. But you know, he patched things up, and he was cool with Iceman.
Yeah, and then
the iciest of men.
And then he has a scene by himself on some below deck side of the deck thing where there's a beautiful view of the ocean, and he's got the dog tags from Goose, which he had, you know, consulted for his use the force moment in the plane earlier, and he throws them away because he doesn't need Goose anymore.
No, well, you know, as Tom Skerritt said, if you're going to be in combat, it's going to happen. You got to let him go. You can't let him take you down. You just got to keep moving. What you do up there is dangerous.
Yeah, what you do up there is dangerous, and you can't let him keep you down because what you're going to go do is apply to be a teacher back at the Top Gun school.
So yeah, I have a question about that. So, at the end scene there, when he sees Kelly McGillis again, he's back and she's back, you know, because she got her Pentagon job with his MIG info, and they're both like reuniting at the school again. So is he there to be a teacher? Because he's got his hat, and I thought they only give hats to the people who won the prize. But did he win the prize? Because they graduated, but I don't know if graduation was the same as winning the Top Gun hat. But did he win the hat and then go back to being just a teacher?
I have absolutely no idea what that's supposed to depict. Mm. And I was kind of hoping you would tell me, because I also had a similar question, because I thought it was supposed to be, like, there was, like, the poster on the wall, it's Kansas City, and it's just like, what? And it's Kansas City barbecue, and it's just like, okay. And, like,
Fighter Town, USA.
It's the same scene where, you know, Goose had been playing on the piano. They were singing earlier, and now she puts in the quarter in the jukebox and then hides around a corner and then pops out and says, surprise. But, like, it's very strange to me because I can't figure out why they would be doing these things. Like, if he wanted, like, why wasn't he talking to her or something? Like, were they estranged at some point? It just seemed like the last scene we saw her in was the one where she's like, let me know if you need anything. You know, I'm here for you or whatever. And she, you know, peels off. And then he goes up and talks to Meg Ryan, and she's sad and touches his face and leaves. And then he goes to the pool party, and they all get their orders to ship out. And then he comes back and he sees her and they do the jukebox thing. It's just like, it's very oddly serendipitous and strange if you're not talking to one another. But
no, I think their last scene was when he wanted to quit, and she's all like, well, you got the quitting down right, see you later, whatever. And then she leaves and goes back to her Pentagon job, because he mentioned she got her Pentagon job. So I think that was her saying, you shouldn't quit because you're good, but I'm leaving because I got my thing. And then she comes back later at the other thing. But okay, so getting back to the hat, if the rules of the movie are to be believed, I believe you get the hat if you win the prize. So based on that, my assumption is that he won. He was the best in show or whatever, but best in air show. And he got the hat. And then a year later, he came back as a teacher. And I think it's got to be like a summer camp thing where, like, the graduates come back to teach the next class of kids that they don't know poop about poop.
No, so, but that can't be, because Viper and Jester were teaching there for many years. There wasn't a camp counselor situation.
Right. No, I think it's the kind of thing that, like, it's a 6-week course that happens every year or whatever. And the best pilots get to go there. And if you've been through the class, you get to go back as a teacher. If you haven't been through the class, you get to be a student.
OK,
that's my assumption.
Yeah, I don't exactly know. They didn't really even explain it. He had that line that he says to the guy. And then he's just there, and then there's a jukebox, and then the kiss in the end, and the Pepsi logo.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. Like, they just don't really spell out exactly how their life shaked out. It's fine, though, since I don't really care. But it's strange from a narrative point of view that it's just sort of like, And then everything just comes together in a dreamy kind of a way.
Yeah, it's also strange that he had a choice to try and, like, transfer to be a teacher or whatever, because assumedly they're all, you know, still in the Navy. So if he's got to go do stuff, like, he'll get orders and they'll do stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he says that his name personally is on, like, the front page of every newspaper in the world. Mm-hmm. And that he can have any job that he wants now. So what is he going to request?
Mm.
And he says he's going to be a teacher. And then,
oh, you think they blew his cover, so he can't be a secret spy flying around in other countries, so he's got to go do something else.
No, I don't really think he did any of those things before. I was just saying that that's the dialogue that they have to explain this. I don't know how that works on a functional level. I'm assuming that it doesn't really, and that maybe he was just saying that, and then maybe he just happened to have some time off and was there for the thing, because whatever. But that's it.
I think after graduation, the seniors get to come back teach the next group of kids. I think that's how the Top Gun program works.
That is really literally not what we saw in the film.
Well, I mean, maybe the other folks aren't good enough. Like, I mean, maybe only the seniors that won the prize get to come back, which is why all the teachers have their own hat.
That's... No. Dan, that's not what we saw in the film. You have to abandon the summer camp thing.
I mean, we only saw
what happened to you at summer camp?
I've never been to a summer camp.
Okay, so then are you envious of people who have been to summer camps and have been invited back as an instructor?
I mean, if they get to fly F-14s, yeah.
Are you envious of the hats?
I have a difficult relationship with hats.
Because I was going to say, I thought you didn't really like hats.
Well, hats don't typically fit my head is the problem. I have a hat now that sort of fits. It's even a little bit large, which makes it look even more ridiculous because my head's gigantic. But I would wear a Top Gun hat if I had won a Top Gun thing.
Okay. So, your fixation on this is that maybe you could get a hat out of it.
I think my motivation for liking Top Gun because I would get a cool hat out of it is no less ridiculous than the machismo nonsense that motivates the guys in the movie.
Okay.
I would dedicate my life to being a good pilot just to win the Top Gun prize, just so I could walk around in front of those other guys with the hat on and point at it and be like, you don't have one of these?
Yes. That is a goal that you could have.
It's on par with the world, is all I'm saying. The world of this movie.
Yeah, I mean, you'd walk around and people would be like, oh, wow, you have a great hat. And you'd be like, this hat can be my wingman. And then they'd be like, what are you talking about? And you'd be like, the end. And then you'd run away. And then it'd be great.
I'd be like, this hat can be my wingman. They'd be like, what are you talking about? And I'll put a second Top Gun hat on, and they'll both be sideways, so it looks like my head has wings. And I'll be like, look, I'm my own wingman.
It's like the Flying Nun?
Sure.
Okay.
I don't know what that means. It's a TV show.
Sally Field. Anyway, yeah. We'll just skip it.
She was in Smokey and the Bandit.
I've heard that she is.
You haven't seen Smokey and the Bandit?
No.
Oh, it's so good. I mean, not good, but it's like, you know, it's a thing that you need to see.
I like how you would do immediately retract the word good from your assessment of the film.
It's a classic film that glorifies a cool car that I really want.
Uh-huh.
You should watch Smokey and the Bandit. Okay. Don't watch the second or third one, though.
They made three? Did they make more than three?
I think they may have even made more than three. The first two are the ones that have, what's his name, and Burt Reynolds in them.
Yeah.
Even in the second one, he's already sort of like letting himself slip and like he looks dramatically older. There was a pretty decent gap between the two movies. But the third one doesn't have him in it at all. It's just Jerry Reed, which is peculiar.
Who's Jerry Reed?
He's an actor.
Oh.
I think he's a musician as well. He plays Snowman.
As in the Abominable?
No, Snowman drives the big rig, and the bandit drives the chase car out in front to distract the police. So the cops chase him, and then the semi truck can go as fast as possible, not as fast as the Firebird.
Yeah, well, yeah, that makes sense. That gels with my recollection of the cars from the episode of Archer that I watched where he was in the chase car and they were doing
this. Yeah, they definitely did the same thing. Yeah. I think he even wore the cowboy hat and stuff.
Yeah, they were doing references I didn't get.
You should watch Smokey and the Bandit so you understand that Archer episode better.
Yeah, that's a good goal.
Mm-hmm.
I'll
everyone's got
that.
A call sign in that movie too, you know?
Yeah, and well, I think there's also an Archer episode that references Top Gun. Well, there was that too.
It was a trailer. It was the commercial for the new season that they basically did like a shot for shot remake of the trailer or something, didn't they?
Sure. I just remember seeing it as a GIF.
It was pretty great. It was a commercial for the new season coming up. It was pretty good.
Oh, okay.
Danger Zone.
Highway 2.
Yeah. See, all the great movies, people have call signs. You know, you got Bandit and Snowman and Frog and then, you know, all the other folks on the CB radio there.
Yeah, well, we don't really have radios. We have the internet, Dan.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We should have cool nicknames, too.
Oh. Well, what's your call sign?
I don't know. I think we should do a little brainstorming.
Okay.
A little jam session here trying to figure out what our call sign should be.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. See, I think generally speaking, in a very not subtle way, most of the people in this movie, their call sign reflects their personality and their position in the movie. So, let's see.
Would it help if I were to tell you some of the names of the actual Air Force officers who were used in the other crew section of this film?
I mean, it wouldn't hurt.
Okay. Lieutenant Commander Lloyd Bozo Abel. Lieutenant Scott D. Bear Altman.
D Bear?
D hyphen Bear. D Bear.
I think Bozo might be a contender, but let's keep going. Let's keep thinking.
Lieutenant Dave Bio Baranek.
Bio.
Lieutenant Michael Vita Blue. Lieutenant Dennis Loner Broska. Broska.
See, those loners, they're cowboys. You got to be careful. Got to watch out for them. They don't play well on a team.
Lieutenant Peter Horse Kalk. Kalk, as in I'm going to kalk the tub.
C-A-U-L-K. Did you overemphasize that because how it might potentially sound preceded by his call sign?
Yes. That is exactly why I did that.
I think we know how he got his call sign.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's my favorite so far.
Okay. John Player Cushing, Jim Flex Destefini.
Oh, see, now we understand where the volleyball scene came from, the flexing.
Ah.
It's got to be a thing.
Okay. It's got to be a Destiniffy thing.
Unless you think that he's the co-inventor of Flex Seal.
No, I don't really think so. It's like Flex Seal the Calk. So Captain Dennis Sunshine De La Sente.
There are a lot of epoxy related people and or nicknames in this crew. So it just goes to show that when you're on an aircraft carrier, sometimes you got to patch some stuff.
Mm-hmm. Patch it with a little sunshine.
Patch it with some epoxy.
Lieutenant Gregory Hollywood Dissart.
Hollywood. Oh, so they directly stole Hollywood.
Yeah.
Who hasn't had a friend whose nickname was Hollywood, though?
It happens all the
time. Actually, I think you have to be Hollywood because you live basically there.
But, I mean, not really. And I also hate Hollywood.
Okay, do you want us to call you Beverly Hills, then?
I don't think so, because that makes me sound snobby.
Something you are most certainly not.
No, definitely not. So we'll have to think about that one.
You want your nickname to be like Kale or something? Macaron, and if anybody says it wrong, we could give him a steely-eyed look.
No, let's we'll save it. I'm not even through these names yet. Lieutenant Michael Flex Galpin. We've got Ricky Organ Hammonds. We've got Chuck Silver Lewis.
Silver.
Terrence Circus McGuire.
Circus.
Rick Curly Moe.
Oh, that's good. It's because you got two of the Stooges.
Yeah, too bad his first name wasn't Larry.
I think Circus would also work for me potentially.
Yeah, Peter Viper Pettigrew, James Jambo Ray.
Jambo. Rhymes with hambone.
Yes, Jambo.
Mm. Oh, see, move ups in the chat said Steely.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Like Steely Dan.
Oh, no, because you're Dan.
If we were a team, we could be Steely and Dan.
It's not how that works, though.
It could be. I would just, like, my nickname would just be me.
It's not a nickname. That's not how nicknames work. I mean,
it's the blandest possible call sign would be my actual name.
Well, true story. When I was getting confirmed in the Catholic religion, there's a process called confirmation. I am a lapsed Catholic, of course, but at the time I was getting confirmed, and so you have to pick a name of a saint, and that gets incorporated into your name, and so you become your first name, your I think it's saint name, then middle name, and then last name. I could have the middle and the saint reversed. But anyway, no, it is definitely saint name, then your middle name, then your last name, because I'm Joseph Philip Rosensteel. So, because I picked Saint Joseph, and I got a good laugh out of the bishop for that one, because it's like, so you picked Joseph, and your name's Joseph? And I said, yep. So he said, you're Joseph, and I said, yep. And he just started laughing.
We know for sure in Goodfellas you would be Joseph two times.
Yes. Joseph. Just don't call me JoJo, because that is repellent.
JoJo is a type of wedge potato, so we wouldn't do that.
Or a monkey. Now, Lieutenant Ban Rabbi Schneider.
Where's the monkey named JoJo from?
I have no idea.
Aside from You Look Nice Today?
It just sounds like a thing.
It's
you would name
look
a monkey.
Nice Today.
Oh, okay.
It's the name of a monkey that Merlin had that he used to make out with when he was a kid. See, this is why you should listen to You Look Nice Today, so you don't make references to things like that accidentally.
Oh, that was what I didn't realize I was in that danger. That danger zone. So we have Major Ray Secks, S-E-C-K-S.
Oh, see, that's punny.
Seckinger is his last name. Spelled like the sex part, but without the S, and then the injure at the end. We've got Lieutenant Tracy Too Cool Skeels, S-K-E-E-L-S. So, not my name. We got Lieutenant J.G. Kenneth Squire Smith. And we've got Lieutenant Commander Sobs Sobiek. And Lieutenant William Tex Spence, who wants to guess where he is from. Anyone?
Georgia.
Oh, good guess, Dan. Captain Michael Boa Strait. Boa. Mm. Strait.
I don't want to hypothesize on
Lieutenant
that one.
Commander Robert Rat Willard.
How many more of these are there?
Lieutenant James Jaws Winfield. And that's it.
Wait. What am I looking at here? They released a stereo 3D version of this movie in 2013?
Yes. Legend did a stereo conversion.
What in God's name?
I haven't seen it.
I don't want to see it.
I don't plan on seeing it either. Yeah. There is a rather in-depth article on 3D Guide about, FX Guide, about how they did the 3D for the film, and I saw it when I was looking around to see if maybe there was something on the model airplanes, and I was just like, oh, nope, click away.
did they do any special extrusion on the film grain?
I have no idea what they did for the film grain. I'm going to assume that they did the same thing everybody else does, and they degrained it, and then offset it, and then regrained it. So, Who knows? But we back to the call signs.
So let's see, something that I know what your call sign should be.
I haven't liked any suggestion you've had so far, so go ahead, lay it on me.
Joseph, I'm fine. Steel.
That's too long.
You could just be fine.
Joseph Fine Steel.
Yeah.
It just sounds like Fine Steel, like it's like my last name.
Well, when you're flying around, people are just going to call you Fine. There's a MiG on your tail, Fine.
No, that's. This is not appealing to me, Dan.
I don't know that these have to be appealing. Do you get the impression that people pick their own, or do you think that this is sort of like a group think kind of thing that people suggest it to them, and you know they pick it just sort of like as a consensus thing, like, you know, 75% rule.
Well, see, yeah, this is the thing. Like with a nickname, I don't think you get to pick it yourself. It's whatever everybody calls you.
Yeah.
And so with a call sign, I don't know, because I'm not in the Air Force. But I'm assuming there is some group consensus on it, in addition to the fact that you've selected it for yourself. So maybe people start calling you something or whatever, and then it sticks. Because otherwise, you run around with like 20,000 people who are called Viper. And I just don't see that being a feasible system. You know, because you also wind up with people who call themselves like Viper or the Joker or something like that, and it's just like you're totally not one of them. Like,
well, we got Viper and Jester in here. All right, let's take a step back and say.
So, like, if you had selected for yourself the name Chad, I'd be like, no, you're not a Chad. You're definitely not a Chad. It's not happening. You're
mean like Chad, like from the singer of the Nickelbacks, or like like the thing from the voting piece of paper.
Everything that is horrible is basically tied to someone named Chad. So we'll just go with that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's go back and talk about childhood nicknames. Did you have any outstanding nicknames? Whether or not you like them, things that people called you on a regular, ongoing basis, perhaps for years.
Well, of course, there's obviously Joe. Because that's not my name is actually Joseph.
That's not a nickname.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a name that's not your name that people call you. But
by the way, I don't mean to interrupt you, but MoveUp suggested my call sign be Waffles, and I'm totally okay with that. But we'll come back to that.
This is a good call sign for you. That was a really good call sign for you. That was a good job, MoveUp.
My helmet could have a big picture of a waffle on it. That'd be pretty great.
Now, would the waffle be on the sides, like two big discs of Eggo waffle on each side, or would it be in the front?
It would be very much like sundown, sort of like the circular rings coming from a center, like forehead position. It would just be like half of an Eggo, like cresting the horizon as if it were the sun.
Uh-huh.
That's what I picture personally. I mean, you know, the group is welcome to offer their input, of course.
Now, would there be syrup on the helmet?
I think maybe dripping down the waffle since it's going to be vertical.
Yeah, but then it would be dripping down over your eye area, or well, would it go around the sides like big sweat drops going around your brow?
Well, the photo is limited to mostly the forehead area of the helmet.
Mm-hmm.
So the waffle would have imagery of syrup on it, but it's not like literally syrup on my face.
No, I didn't. That wasn't what I was talking about. I just meant. Where would the graphic go? Because it is not going on your face.
I think just a couple drips or streams of maple syrup dripping down the front of the waffle.
Okay.
Fill a waffle with maple syrup and then tilt it up, and that's basically what it would look like.
But you're only using half of it because it's supposed to look like a sunrise.
Correct. Yes.
So wouldn't most of that syrup not be visible?
Half of it.
Okay.
All right, let's go back to your childhood nicknames.
So anyway, there's Joe, which you have ruled is not a nickname. And there were people who called me Joey, which I absolutely detest. And then there, what was it? A friend of mine would call me Mojo, which was weird at the time, but you know, Austin Powers or whatever.
Yeah. I was going to say, is that an Austin Powers thing?
Yeah. But that doesn't really stick, and you can't call yourself that because you just sound like a repulsive human being. So no one do that.
They call me Mojo.
And then so you move past all of that. Basically when I started working at Sony on Language in the Wardrobe, one of the coordinators there started calling me Joe Steele because it was easier than typing out Joseph Rosensteel, which is what I was trying to go by professionally, just like as my name was Joseph at the time. And people would ask me, like, can we call you Joe? And I'd be like, that's fine. Because all my paperwork would just say Joseph, because I wanted my credit on a film to say Joseph Rosensteel, and not Joe Rosensteel. And so that's basically it. And then the Joe Steele thing stuck from that, and I used it as, like, a username for Twitter when I was signing up. And so then it stuck there, and then people just call me that. But it is not something that I created myself.
So...
And it basically sounds like a porn name too. So,
you know. I mean, it sounds like a fake name, but yeah. Well, no, but so we've got Mojo and we've got Joe Steele. So I think Steele has to be your call sign. I mean, it's not particularly new.
But wouldn't that be Joe Steele Rosensteel?
Yes, but you would be like SECKS guy, where that was in a shorter version of his last name.
Yeah, but that one was like an innuendo. Like mine's not.
Well, you know, you're tough as steel.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm open to giving you a different one. I just think we may have settled on one that works for you potentially.
Okay, so waffles and steel. And now, is it waffle or waffles? I would assume it's waffles.
Hmm. It's a good point.
Because Move Up says waffles in the chat room.
Yeah, none of these other ones are plural. But waffle is one of those things that if you don't pluralize it, it doesn't, it, you know, it has an alternative use.
Yeah, it means that you can't make up your mind
mm-hmm.
on whether or not you should say waffles or waffle.
Hmm. I mean, I would go plural because I don't think I have ever eaten a single waffle unless yeah. it is like a single, very large, like Belgian style waffle.
No, you don't want people to think that you're skimpy with your waffles. So,
No. So well, it's waffles for everybody.
Dan waffles for everybody, Sturm.
Sure. No, I was going to say, over my lifetime, I've only had a couple of nicknames, one of which was Stitch, which because I got stitches a lot as a kid. And the other one that, of course, everyone calls me is Strum or some variation of Strum. A guy I used to work with still calls me Sturmato.
That's weird.
Yeah, as in like tomato. Like,
yeah,
but
yeah. Sturmato.
Like, Sturmato.
Oh, yes. I thought it was Sturmato, like a tornado made of sturms or something.
Oh, that would be preferable, but no, it's Sturmato, as in tomato.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, they can't all be winners.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Move ups. People have briefly flirted with Sturminator, but it's not very. Fun to keep going with because it's not that interesting.
Oh.
It's not very unique either.
No.
Yeah. The rule of nicknames are always plural or have an added Y, L, Y, or... Oh, interesting.
I didn't know that rule.
So...
Where did that rule come from?
Steely.
Okay.
Steelo, Steely, Steels with a Z. Steels with a Z. Joe Steels. There are multiple of you.
Sure.
Hmm.
I'm still that won over by this.
See, if your nickname is Steel, though, like on your helmet, you could do like those airbrushed like fake rivets thing that everybody did in Photoshop like back in the 90s. You remember that?
Yeah. Well, one thing that would be easy, though, is if we were doing a cocktail for you, then you would be the Dan and Stormy.
See,
because the dark and stormy.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of rum, but sure.
But the dark and stormy is good.
I feel like I've had a friend of mine, Jeff, who I work with, is a big fan of the dark and stormy. I don't know if I've actually had one. I feel like I have, but I don't know.
Well,
what's in a dark and stormy?
I forget, but they're good. And but you have to go to one of the fussy places that makes them. You don't want to order it like an airport bar.
It's a good thing we have so many fussy rum bars around here. Joe, do you know any fussy rum bars?
I can't think of one, but yeah, the Dark and Stormy is a highball cocktail made with dark rum, the dark, and ginger beer, the Stormy, served over ice and garnished with a slice of lime.
That actually does sound kind of appealing.
Yeah.
Hmm. I would drink that.
Yeah, there's nothing bad about it. It's totally refreshing. And not too sweet, because it's just, you know, just a little rum and a little ginger beer. You know, you like Moscow Mules, right?
Yeah, they're fine.
Okay, we'll just substitute vodka for rum.
That could be acceptable.
See? So, anyway, the Dan and Sturmy is your cocktail.
Mm. We've also got Dork and Sturmy, which I think in that particular permutation, you are the dork.
What?
I'm just reading you what's in the chat room.
Aww.
It's rare that we get such, you know... fervent chat room cooperation.
Yeah. Well, so. I have to ask, though, since we've done call signs and I don't like mine, what cocktail would I be then? If you were picking something you had to go with as like some weird portmanteau name for a themed event, what would it be?
Oh, boy. I don't know that many... names of cocktails. I feel like it would be something with a cold pressed juice in it, just to stay on theme. But I want to say a Tom Collins, but I don't know why.
I've never had a Tom Collins.
Well,
I just remember in Meet the Parents when there's the whole ordeal about the Collins mix.
Yeah, that is a cultural reference to that drink.
That is the only thing that I remember from.
Oh, Crown Royal.
That's in it?
Something with maple Crown Royal is what somebody said. No, that's not in.
I was like, that's repulsive. Why would you say that about me?
Tom Collins, let's see what it has here. Gin, lemon juice, sugar, carbonated water.
I hate gin.
Well, some gin is okay. No, carbonated water is great.
Hate gin. Hate. Some... Will not drink.
I would drink a Tom Collins.
It's like Pine Sol.
Maybe I should be Tom Collins. Well, no, it depends on what gin you get. You can be the Dark and Stormy, and I'll be the Tom Collins. See, how about we do that? We take each other's call signs just to confuse people.
But Tom Collins isn't really a clever name. Was there something you were going to do with the name, Dan?
No, see, I don't know any names that... the thing is mixing steel with a beverage. I'm not sure there are a lot of steel-themed beverages or metal-in-general-themed beverages.
Well, you don't have to mix steel. Just any part of my name. Could be Joe, could be Rosen, could be some portmanteau play on something. Rosen Kale, I don't know, whatever. Come up with something.
See, coming up with puns on the spot or portmanteaus on the spot, it's not really my strong suit here.
Oh, that's...
So if you'd like to cut out 5 minutes of silence while I think about it and do some Googling, we can certainly do that.
No, it's okay. Well, listeners of this program, this fine program... I guess fine program. It's okay. Can you please write in your suggestions for things, and we will tally and summarize them.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. We could crowdsource, because like you said, you know, the nicknames and the call signs, it should be sort of a group consensus kind of thing, like a nickname.
Yeah, I don't want to give the impression that this is a democracy, so this is not like by the number of votes or anything. But you are a good idea pool, listeners.
Oh yeah, we will absolutely pretend you never sent something in if it is a terrible suggestion.
Yeah, or like if you tweet it to us and we don't like fave or reply to you, there might be a reason.
Yeah, so, we'll just block you.
Yeah, we'll never talk to you again.
give us good nicknames, or we'll never speak to you again.
Yeah,
that's how it works. It's not actually how it works.
No, we're very nice.
Hmm.
Spoiler alert.
Are there any beverages that include maple syrup?
I'm sure there are, but I don't want to drink them. I don't actually like, I mean, I like maple enough in certain contexts, but I don't want it in a beverage.
Donuts and waffles. We've already established both of those things.
Yeah, exactly.
Maple is the best kind of donut. I think we both agreed on that.
You know, maple bacon, I like that. That's also good. But again, I don't want any of these things in my cocktails.
Hmm. What is your favorite cocktail?
I like Moscow Mules. I like, a good Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
I like a good Godfather more than a Manhattan, really, to be perfectly honest.
What's a Godfather?
It's like a Manhattan, but you use amaretto in it.
Instead of what?
Yeah, not just instead, in addition.
Interesting.
Yeah. But might the way
cut,
I mix
cut
it.
Cut down a little bit of the bite.
Yeah, well, the way I mix it, I do it, I do a sort of pseudo-Godfather, I don't know, Godfather Part 2 or something, where I have basically the same instructions that you would make a Manhattan with, up, or on the rocks, either way, and then I substitute the sweet red vermouth for delicious stuff, so...
So you're removing all of the bite.
Yeah, it's just booze. So straight booze.
If you're removing all of the bite from a Godfather, I think you might want to go with like calling it a Fredo, maybe.
Oh.
I mean, it's not to say he doesn't have merit. He's the older brother.
I just don't want to kiss every glass. That just seems arduous.
He's smart.
Yeah.
He can do things.
I think he's more suited to the Cuba Libre.
Very true. Yeah.
Yeah. I like a good Cuba Libre. You can't have too many of those though. Too much sugar.
Yeah, for sure.
And also you need it to be made with like Mexican Coke, like actual sugar Coke being made with high fructose corn syrup, that nozzle presser stuff that comes out of the back of the bar. No. Gross. Icky.
Well, they're not even doing pure cane sugar in the Mexico Coke anymore, are they?
Oh, did they change that?
I think they changed that, or at least there was some people getting their feathers ruffled that they were going to change it.
Oh, well, hopefully their feathers got ruffled enough that it didn't get changed, because it would be a shame.
Mm-hmm. Would be a shame. I had a follow-up question, but it's completely gone from me now.
Oh, good, because I think this is the end of the show.
Well, it's good that I ran out of questions if we're going to end the show.
Yeah.
So, Top Gun.
It was a movie?
I like Top Gun. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
I think it has earned its place in the pop culture, both ironically and unironically.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very pretty movie, and I can't take it very seriously, and I don't enjoy Tom Cruise at all. But I like watching it every time that I watch it, and I usually don't watch all of it in one sitting like I did today. But it's a good, delightful little thing. Everybody should give it a shot. It's on Netflix, by the way. Did we mention that?
Oh yeah, Netflix for free.
Well, for the cost of your monthly subscription, which has increased in price.
Or whatever it is.
Well, it's $9. Gone up to
Yeah, I appreciate that Top Gun is a very, you know, for what it is, for being a very macho, very serious, very bro-y kind of movie. It is an action movie with genuine action and suspense, and the stakes for the movie are not like, you know, the end of the world or the end of the United States or like global thermonuclear war. It's just like, you know, this one guy and it's his world and... The stakes are more intimate for an action movie. I don't think you're going to see this intimate of an action movie anymore these days, but I like Top Gun.
Yeah.
Plus, he rides a motorcycle, and I like motorcycles, too.
The biggest risk they had is that the MiGs were going to blow up the aircraft carrier.
Yeah, that's right, because if they get within 150 miles, they can shoot their boat busters or whatever they called them.
Yeah, the special ship missile, which I'm assuming didn't really exist, but maybe it did, because it seems like it would have been an awfully big international incident had they actually destroyed an aircraft carrier of an Enterprise class. I think just guessing, but whatever.
Well, it was Russia. They got nukes. What are they gonna do? You gonna fight back? Let's fight. You know, it's gonna be a nuclear war after that.
Yeah, it's a mutually assured destruction. Mm-hmm. Mad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Doomsday clock.
Well, they blew up one F-14 in this movie, didn't they? Aside from the you know, the one that went into the flat spin and crashed.
What?
The good guys. Only one of them blew up.
Oh, I thought you meant like they had like an actual set piece.
No. Only one of them got shot down by the bad guys.
Yeah. Because I was gonna say I didn't think they lost that, but they did unfortunately lose a stunt performer who was doing some aerial stuff for them. Unfortunately, he lost control of his plane and was gone and was never recovered. That's sad.
Oh. I did not realize it. Like, in the ocean?
Yeah.
Hmm. That's not good.
No, that's a pity. But the movie is dedicated to him, rightfully so. It's a good film about aviation, his passion. So, yay.
Hmm. Mm. Well, I guess that's a downer to end on, but...
Yeah, well, I mean... That was a bad ending.
We could put a Pepsi logo up.
Oh, man. No.
Boy. I didn't even see the Pepsi logo. Was it in between them?
Yeah. It was facing out of the window, but backlit, so that you could see it was Pepsi, but backwards, and then they kissed right in front of it. And apparently there was
They hold each other's faces.
Yeah. I'm just imagining it's Tom Cruise's idea of passion.
Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say there's also apparently like a Diet Pepsi commercial project that was tied into the film that they made a lot of money off of and sold a lot of Pepsi. So Diet Pepsi.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I every time I saw them get face to face like that, I found myself wondering, Kelly McGillis is 5'10", so how much was she slouching down versus what were they propping up Tom Cruise on?
Oh, I think he had like a little Apple box. Yeah. But
in the elevator, in the restaurant there.
Yeah, just wedge heels.
In the house, because he's only 5'7", so he only needed a couple inches to get the eye line back on par.
Yeah, she just had to wear flats, and he would wear some wedges, and it would be fine.
Wedges.
Yeah, well, some people who are short stature wear just some hefty heels, shall we say.
Mm-hmm. Platforms, maybe.
Yeah, you know, I still think he's weird, and that sex scene is weird. I don't find anything about that entertaining to me on any level.
It's the only scene in the movie that's not orange. It's very blue.
Yeah. Well, it's nighttime, Dan, all of a sudden.
Sure.
Because it was sunset when they were going inside.
And then apparently perpetually sunset in the entire movie.
Yeah, and then apparently they spent like an hour waiting for the sun to go down so that they could just grope each other.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know.
Different strokes, so to speak, for different folks.
They're allowed to have their preferences.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Some friends of mine worked with Michael Ironside a week or two ago. I'm a little jealous.
Oh, man.
Guess he was in town for a thing.
Hmm.
I don't know what it is, but saw a bunch of behind-the-scenes photos of crew guys getting their pictures taken with him.
He turns up in all of the amazing places in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And pretty great.
Mid to early 90s.
He's good looking angry.
Yeah, he's a very serious guy that you want to take seriously. Ironically named Jester.
See, he's got one of those, like, you nickname a tall guy tiny, because he's not a jester at all.
No. Irony.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wolfman.
Mm-hmm.
Slider.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think they called him Slider? You think there's, like, a tiny thing, like Slider the mini hamburger? He was a pretty tall guy.
Or maybe he just slid into rooms.
Like Kramer on Seinfeld?
Yeah. I mean, did you ever see him enter or leave a room? No, so.
It's entirely possible. Yeah, he slides on in.
Yeah. Anything's possible, then. In the world of this film.
Anything's possible when you have a cool nickname.
Yeah.
All right, people of the internet, give us nicknames. We'll put them on the side of our fighter jet.
Mm-hmm.
Or we'll Photoshop them on the side of a fighter jet, at least.
No.
Okay, I'll Photoshop them on the side of a fighter jet.
Thanks, Dad. Thanks for going the extra mile.
It's the little things I do to contribute to this podcast. Yeah.